Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 8, Chapter entitled Markandeya's Prayers to Narayan Rishi. Text number 47. Tasmai namo bhagavate purushaya pumne.
Tasmai namo bhagavate purushaya pumne.
Vishwaya vishwagrave para daivataya.
Vishwaya vishwagrave.
Narayanaya Rishaye cha Narottamaya.
Narayanaya Rishaye cha Narottamaya.
Hamsaya samyata gire nigameshwaraya.
Hamsaya samyata gire nigameshwaraya.
Tasmai.
Tasmai.
Shrikim.
Nama.
My obeisances.
Bhagavate.
To the Godhead.
Purushaya.
The Supreme Person.
The All Pervading One.
Vishwaya.
Vishwaya.
The All Inclusive Manifestation of the Universe.
The All Inclusive Manifestation of the Universe.
Vishwagurave,
Vishwagurave,
the spiritual master of the universe.
Paradaivataya,
the supremely worshipable deity. Narayanaya,
Narayanaya,
to Lord Narayana.
Lord Narayana.
Rishaye,
Rishaye,
the sage.
Sage.
Cha.
And
Nara Uttamaya, to the best of human beings. Hamsaya,
Hamsaya,
situated in perfect purity.
Samyata Gire,
who has controlled his speech.
Nigama
Ishvaraya, the master of the Vedic scriptures. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. I offer my humble obeisances to him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the all-pervading and all-inclusive form of the universe, as well as its spiritual master. I bow down to Lord Narayan, the supreme worshipable deity appearing as a sage, and also to the saintly Nara, the best of human beings, who is fixed in perfect goodness, fully in control of his speech, and the propagator of the Vedic literatures. Translation responsibly. I offer my humble obeisances to him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
He is the all-pervading and all-inclusive form.
He is the all-pervading and all-inclusive form.
Of the universe.
Of the universe.
As well as its spiritual master.
As well as its spiritual master.
I bow down to Lord Narayan.
I bow down to Lord Narayan.
The supremely worshipable deity.
The supremely worshipable deity.
Appearing as a sage.
Appearing as a sage.
And also to the saintly Nara.
And also to the saintly Nara.
The best of human beings.
The best of human beings.
Who is fixed in perfect goodness.
Who is fixed in perfect goodness.
Fully in control of his speech.
Fully in control of his speech.
And the propagator of the Vedic literatures.
And the propagator of the Vedic literatures.
Text 48. A materialist, his intelligence perverted by the action of his deceptive senses, cannot recognize you at all, although you are always present within his own senses and heart, and also among the objects of his perception. Yet even though one's understanding has been covered by your illusory potency, if one obtains Vedic knowledge from you, the supreme spiritual master of all, he can directly understand you. Text 49. My dear Lord, the Vedic literatures alone reveal confidential knowledge of your supreme personality. And thus even such great scholars as Lord Brahma himself are bewildered in their attempt to understand you through empirical methods. Each philosopher understands you according to his particular speculative conclusions. I worship that supreme person, knowledge of whom is hidden by the bodily designations covering the conditioned soul's spiritual identity. Report. Even great demigods like Lord Brahma are bewildered in their speculative attempts to understand the supreme personality of Godhead. Each philosopher is covered by a unique combination of the modes of nature, and thus describes the supreme truth according to his own material conditioning. Therefore, even strenuous empirical endeavor will never bring one to the conclusion of all knowledge. The highest knowledge is Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, and one can understand him only by fully surrendering to him and serving him with love. This is why Markandeya Rishi states here, Vande Maha Purusham, I simply worship that supreme personality. Those who try to worship God, but at the same time continue speculating or acting fruitively, will attain only mixed and bewildering results. To be a pure devotee, a devotee must give up all fruitive activity and mental speculation. In that way, his loving service to the Lord will yield perfect knowledge of the Supreme. Only this perfection can satisfy the eternal soul. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada, to the 12th canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Markandeya's Prayers to Nara Narayan Rishi. Omagyan Timidandasya Dinanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Pansha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Yevacha Patitana Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. A nice comment is made in the purport that people try to understand God in different ways, and some of the scriptures of the world, the great scriptures of the world and the great religions of the world, coming from personalities who are not completely pure in their consciousness. In other words, they are tainted or tinged by the modes of nature, and because they are tainted or tinged by the modes of nature, their writings and teachings are also, you could say, contaminated by the modes of nature. When Mahaprabhu met the Chankazi and they had their conversation, at that time, India and Bengal were subjugated by the Mughals, by the Muslims. They had overcome, they had conquered the land, And basically, they were turning many people into Muslims by force. So at that time, there was opposition. When Mahaprabhu appeared, there was opposition to the Sankirtan movement being spread. Sometimes, in the modern day, we face some opposition. We find it hard to spread Krishna consciousness. We find the environment is not ideal. That people are trying to stop our preaching, stop our movement, like that. But we have to understand that this is always there historically in the history of Krishna consciousness. You'll see in the past, there was always opposition, heavy opposition. Rupa and Sanatan, who were the principal followers of Mahaprabhu, they were forced to become members of the Mohammedan government because they were threatened, because they were so qualified as people, as scholars and as administrators, they were forced by the Mughals to enter into their government. And they were threatened, if you don't, right, we will begin to kill the Brahmanas and the cows. So they didn't have a choice. It's not that Sanatan and Rupa wanted to work for the Muslims. It's not that they wanted to be a part of their government, but they didn't have a choice. We would do the same thing, right? If someone came and threatened us and said, if you don't cooperate with us, we're going to start killing the devotees, then naturally you'll cooperate. You'll make some adjustment like that. So they made some adjustment. But in order to run the government, they moved to Ramkeli, which is north of Kolkata, north of Mayapur. And they went up there and they ran the government from there. But they established a Gupta Vrindavan, which means a hidden Vrindavan. And they created Radha Kund, Shama Kund, like replicas of the original Kunds. And they went there and they surrounded themselves with Brahmanas, with Vaishnavas, and they spent a great part of the day chanting and studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, having Bhagavatam class. And still they were running the government because they were so efficient and capable. But after some time, the Nawab, he became a little disturbed because, you know, certain things were not being done as efficiently as they could have. So he went to see what was going on. And he entered the place and they were studying the Bhagavatam. And yeah. So he wasn't happy at that time. So he put one of them in jail. He was very disturbed like that. So we have to understand that in the history of our movement, there's always been great opposition. It's not that it was always smooth. Sometimes we face some opposition, we find, oh, why is it like this? But it's always been there. And it's been heavy, serious opposition in the past. You see that all of the original deities in Vrindavan had to be moved, except for Radha Raman. Radha Raman is the only original deity of the Goswamis who's still present in Vrindavan. All of the other deities are gone. Gokulananda, Shamasunda, Madan Mohan, Govinda, Gopinath, they're all over near Jaipur, in that direction, being protected by the Rajasthani, the Vaishnav kings. So the deities had to be moved because the Mughals were smashing the temples and they were destroying the deities. Rupa Goswami built a temple for Govindadev, which was 7 stories high, and the Deepa, or the light upon the top of the temple, that could be seen in Agra from Mathura. In Mathura from Vrindavan. Right? They could see it in Mathura, right? And the Mughals were there. You've seen they built that huge mosque next to the Janmastan where Krishna appeared. They came in, there was a temple there. They smashed the temple and they built a huge mosque. Right? And now we've built, well, the Vaishnavas have built a huge temple next to the mosque. There's a huge mosque and a huge temple next to each other. Right next to each other, just massive like that. So back then they smashed the temple and they built a huge mosque, and the Nawab, he could see, or the Qazi, whoever the, oh no, it was Aurangzeb, He could see, when he was in station in Mathura, he could see the light on top of the temple from Vrindavan when he was in Mathura. So he said, "What is that?" And they said, "Oh, that's the temple of Govindadev." He said, "Why is it so grand? Why is it so magnificent? Why is it so tall?" Like that. Go and minimize it. So they sent the army and they smashed the top five floors of the temple. Desecrated the temple. This is what was going on. I mean, imagine if someone came and began to destroy our temple. How the devotees would feel. Imagine if people were trying to smash the deities. And we had to travel with the deities and hide them all around the place. Imagine how we would feel. This was what was taking place in the past. Heavy opposition to our movement. All the deities were moved to Radhakund, then to Kamyavan, finally out of Vrindavan over to Jayapur. Right, the only deity which remained was Radharaman. He's still there. Right, self-manifesting deity of Gopalbhatta Goswami. He was hidden. The devotees used to take him at night time in the middle of a lake in a boat, and the devotees would sit there all night in the boat with bows and arrows in the lake, just staying all night, making sure that he was not attacked or harmed. Right, and then during the day they'd take him back, and in hiding they would worship him. His worship has not stopped for hundreds of years. Now he has a very beautiful temple, famous temple, in Vrindavan, Radharaman Mandir. Srila Prabhupada said to the devotees when they established the Krishna Balaram Mandir, he said, "You go to the Radharaman Mandir to learn the standards of deity worship." Their standards are the exemplary standards of how to worship the deities. They cook for the deities on cow dung. The ovens are cow dung ovens. The ovens have not gone out for 350 years. So regular is the deity worship. 7 offerings a day, every day. Right? The ovens have not gone out. This is the standard of deity worship, how to worship the deity so properly. So, there was great opposition. So when Kazi, he heard that Mahaprabhu was starting the Sankirtan movement. So the Sankirtan movement was beginning. Mahaprabhu appeared. I mean, Lord Chaitanya is the supreme personality of Godhead himself. He's Swayam Bhagavan. He is the Lord of all creation. But when he came, there was opposition. Right? The devotees were being threatened. Right? People would come, the Muslims would come, the soldiers would come, while the devotees were having kirtan. Right? At Srivas Angam, at Srivas Thakur's house, where the devotees would meet and have kirtan. The Muslims would come, the soldiers would come in and grab the mridangas off the devotees while they were chanting and smash them on the ground. The sacred mridanga. The mridanga is it's actually an incarnation of Krishna's flute. That's why Prabhupada said the mridanga should never be put on the ground. Like even we put on the mat, but actually the mat's not really where Prabhupada, it was Prabhupada, see in Melbourne we have the stands for the mridanga. It was actually Prabhupada's instruction on the mridangas. He said they should be elevated like that. In Krishna's pastimes, in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna always plays the flute. And then, one time, Radharani called Krishna to Mayapur. That's a little bit of a long story. And then when Krishna came to Navadvip, because what took place is Krishna was enjoying with another gopi. Her name was Viraja. She was another gopi. And Radharani found out that Krishna was with someone else. So immediately she came. She heard, "Oh, Krishna is..." One Sakhi told Radharani. He said, "Oh, Krishna is in that kunj, this particular kunj, and he's enjoying with another gopi." So Radharani was infuriated. So she came to the kunj and she entered in. And when Krishna knew she was coming, he said to the Viraja, he said to the other gopi, he said, "Turn into a river." So she manifested into a river, into a stream. So Radharani came in and she said, "You've been with someone else?" And Krishna said, "I'm not with anyone." He said, I'm not with anyone," like that. And Radharani, she knew that Krishna had been with someone. So she left in complete anger. Man means anger, jealous anger. And she went between the Jamuna and the Ganga, which means east of Vrindavan. She went to Mayapur, that place. Navadvip. Nava means new. Nine. It also means new. Right? Nava. New Dvipa. New island. So she went, there's an island in between the Ganges and the Jamuna, she went to this new place. And she constructed with her sakis, with all the gopis, a beautiful forest. And she decorated as beautiful as Vrindavan, a new Dvipa, a new forest, a new Vrindavan, a new place. So she went there and she began to play the flute. And she played the flute so beautifully, and Krishna heard her playing the flute, and Krishna understood her mind. Now she was inviting Krishna, Krishna come. See, Radharani, sometimes she gets angry when Krishna's with someone else. Now why does she do that? Right? We become angry if our lover is with someone else. Why? Because we are jealous. It's about us. Right? We're self-centered. But Radharani has no selfish, not one iota of selfishness within her being. So why is it that she becomes disturbed when Krishna is with someone else? Because she understands that she is Krishna's Ladini Shakti, personified. She is Krishna's, the personification of Krishna's pleasure potency. No one else can give pleasure to Krishna as Radharani can. Only Radharani can fully satisfy Krishna, and Jiva Goswami says, actually there's no need for anyone else. Radharani is enough to fully satisfy Krishna. Everyone else is simply an expansion of Radharani's desire to share Krishna with everyone else. Because Radharani desires to share Krishna with others, then Krishna expands Radharani from her, expands so many others, and then they can also taste and enjoy, experience the bliss of serving Krishna. So all of us are created for that purpose. Because Radharani desires that we all taste the bliss of serving Krishna. So Radharani, she called Krishna, she said, come. She played the flute in such a way that she was saying to Krishna, come and enjoy. So Krishna understood her mood. So then he went to Navadvip, to Mayapur. And when he arrived in Mayapur, and he saw how beautiful it was, and how much bhakti, or how much devotion, how much love she had for him to create such a beautiful forest for his enjoyment and his pleasure, he said, I will always stay in this place. And at that time, he took her bhav and he took her duty. He took her complexion and he took her mood. And he incarnated as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And his flute became the mridanga. So the mridanga is an incarnation of Krishna's flute. That's why it is given reverence, right? That is why it is given respect. So the Muslims, they came and they smashed the mridanga in the middle of the kirtan. You can imagine when we're on the streets, we're chanting, someone comes and takes the mridanga and smashes it. And this is the kind of opposition the devotees were facing. So, because there was such heavy opposition, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said to his devotees, let us go and visit this Kazi. So he said, everyone tonight come. Bring light, bring torches. Because they didn't have lights or torches back then, they had fire.
Mashal.
Yeah, mashal. They had torches like that. So bring these torches, bring the holy name, bring your instruments, and we'll do kirtan. So hundreds of thousands of people turned up. And they all began Sankirtan. And Mahaprabhu divided everyone. You know, and he put Nityananda Prabhu in one group. He put Advaita Acharya in another group. He put Haridas Thakur in another group. He put Vakrashwara Pandit in another group. Right? The principal dancers. And they started a massive kirtan. Wonderful kirtan. One time I was at Bhaktivedanta Ashram, the Govardhan Palace in there. And we had news that there was an ISKCON Parikram party coming. Because you see Parikram parties go past all day, you know, during circumambulating Giriraj. So we're on the roof of the palace, so we're chanting our japa, and, you know, groups are going past. But we knew one particular group was coming. They were from Chalpati, Pune. And we heard them coming, and it was, I'd never heard a kirtan like that before. There was about 1,500 of them, but the potency in the kirtan, Radhanath Swami was personally present. The potency in the, I'd never heard a kirtan like that before, and it gave me an idea of what it was like when Mahaprabhu was actually there. Like, this kirtan had, you know, potency, shakti. Like, the devotees were coming, and they came down, and they stopped in front of the ashram. Radhanath Swami came in to visit Keshav Bharati Maharaj, like that. Danodar Swami. And then Narayan Maharaj came past, because Narayan Maharaj was staying next door with his group, next to, in the Modi ashram, next to the Bhaktivedanta ashram. And his group came, they were coming back from Parikram. Narayan Maharaj came, who has left this world now. And when he came along, Radhanath Swami took the microphone and he said, "Everyone pay obeisances to His Holiness Narayan Maharaj." And everyone bowed down to Narayan Maharaj and came past. This is actually Vaishnava etiquette, like that. So Mahaprabhu started this huge kirtan, and the kirtan went towards the Chankazi, and when the Chankazi heard it coming, all his soldiers just left. They were supposed to be guarding, you know, they were supposed to be guarding the house. Right? And they just left. They went the other direction. And the Kazi was there, and he went upstairs, locked all the doors and went upstairs. And then Mahaprabhu came, and when Mahaprabhu arrived, and the devotees were so worked up, they were so, like, fired up, they started destroying everything. You know, they pushed the fence down and started ripping out all the trees, and they were, you know, they were ready to kill the Kazi. And devotees were chanting, "Kill the Kazi, kill the Kazi, kill the Kazi." At that one time, we went to, we're at the Govardhan retreat, and that was the time when our temples were attacked in Kazakhstan. It was about 5 years ago, I think. And in Kazakhstan, the government came in while it was snowing, deep, deep snow in the middle of winter, with bulldozers, came in to where the devotees had their little farm with all their houses and started just bulldozing the houses down in the middle of the winter. And there's women and children living there. You know, devotee women and children. So immediately all the devotees were called. So we all went from Vrindavan, we got on buses and we all went to Delhi, and we all went to the embassy of the Kazakhstan embassy in Delhi. Thousands of devotees, and we all marched towards there to protest against the persecution of the devotees in Kazakhstan. So they told us to all line up. So we all lined up and we all started marching there, and everyone was chanting. You know, in India, when they get fired up, they all go, "Dum, dum." You know, someone says something on the microphone, everyone goes, "Dum, dum," like that. So I didn't even know what we were saying. You know, I was just going, "Dum, dum," like that. But we're all getting fired up. I mean, everyone was, you know. And I started getting the feeling, you started realizing what Kurukshetra would have been like. You know, you get to a point where it's like, "Hey, let's die. It doesn't matter. I mean, we're fighting for Krishna. If we die, who cares?" Let's, like that. And I was getting that feeling. We're all getting that feeling. So devotees are really getting fired up. So they had a barricade there, and you know, they had like soldiers with guns and everything. And devotees got to the barricade and they were kind of pushing, you know, not like full on, but pushing. But then they got more fired up and just pushed the barricades over and everything. And they went down, and then we got to the actual Kazakhstan embassy, and then they had the what's the Indian special forces, the Gurkhas, or, you know, the special forces in India. In Australia, we have the SAS, or whatever it is in India, the equivalent. I mean, they had the special, you could see these guys, these were like special forces. You know, they were surrounding the Kazakhstan embassy. And then one female soldier, officer in the Indian Army, she pulled up in a jeep and she got out and she got on the microphone and said, "Everyone just calm down." You know, because we were getting pretty fired up. Like, it was about, you know, almost to the point where we were going to run through. So everyone just calmed down and we all sat on the ground, and then we had a protest like that. So sometimes the devotees get into this mood. So when Mahaprabhu took all the devotees to the Kazi, then everyone was in this mood. Destroy the Kazi, they're saying kill the Kazi. So Mahaprabhu told everyone to calm down. He said, "Everyone calm down." He said, "Just sit down." Right? And then he said to the Kazi, "Come out and we'll have some discussion." So the Kazi came out. And they sat down. And then Mahaprabhu, he said, why is it that you are... Well, Kazi said, he said, actually, you are my nephew. Please remember that. Because you have 100,000 people here at least. And actually, we're family members. So, you know, he's trying to pacify Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu wasn't angry at that. I mean, he was angry, but he was, you know, he was equipoise. So. And then he said to the Kazi... The Kazi had had a change of heart at that point, because the night before he had had a dream, and in that dream a lion sat on his chest, and the lion sat on his chest and put his claws on his chest, and the lion said, if you don't leave my devotees alone, I will bifurcate you. And then he went, you know, with his nails and just left a mark on his chest. So the Kazi said to Mahaprabhu, he said, you know, I had a dream last night. Then Mahaprabhu said, what was the dream? And he said, well, a lion came and sat on my chest. And he showed him the marks, and he had claw marks, I suppose. And Sringadeva came and sat on his chest. When God gets angry, right, he, Narasimha, that's the form of God in anger. So he came like that. So Mahaprabhu had a, so then they had a discussion, a philosophical discussion about the relevance of the teachings of the Quran. So Mahaprabhu pointed out that in the Quran there's justification for eating meat. Srila Prabhupada once went to Iran, to Tehran, which is the capital of Iran, and in the evening Prabhupada was there. And just on the sunset, you can hear goats crying around the city. And Prabhupada said, what is that sound? And they said to Prabhupada, they said, in the Muslim religion, Islam, then at sunset, they slaughter the goats. But the teaching is that the blood of the goat must run towards the east. That is the regulation. So there's some regulation. They eat meat, but there's some regulation. It's tamasic religion, but there's some regulation. Prabhupada said, at least there is something. At least they are following some higher order, which means they have a hope in the future of going to some higher religious understanding. Like that. So Mahaprabhu was speaking to the Kazi about the fact that there is eating of flesh in the Quran. Like that. Srila Prabhupada, you'd see, whenever he met with Christian leaders, this is the point that he would always stress. Why do you kill the animals? Why do you eat flesh? Always, he'd just sit. And even when they would try to change the subject, Prabhupada would say, no, no. Right, and he'd keep bringing it back to this point. Prabhupada said, when I preach, I'm like a karate fighter. He said, I find the weak spot and I kick it and kick it and kick it until they go down. That's how Prabhupada would preach. So he would get to this point. Why do you eat the flesh? Like that. And then they would say, you know, and then one priest is a famous video, and the priest is saying to Prabhupada, but the animals do not have souls. And Prabhupada was, you know, and Prabhupada said, why do you eat the flesh? Why do they not have souls? Where is this taught? They do not. And Prabhupada would just attack this point. So Mahaprabhu was also asking the Kazi, saying, why are you eating flesh? Why in the Quran does it say you can eat the flesh? So Mahaprabhu made the point to the Kazi at that point. Mahaprabhu made the point at that point to the Kazi. He said, the Quran is written by conditioned souls, not by people who are fully elevated or fully realized in consciousness. And he said the scripture is affected by the modes of material nature, because there is tamagun there. Eating flesh is tamagun, right? It's tamasic. But there is some regulation of the eating of the flesh. So it is a scripture. Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada said Holy Bible. We accept that there is some divinity in it, but it is not on the level of the Vedas. It is not pure compared to the Bhagavatam and the Gita. It's not on the same level, right, of realization like that, because you're dealing with things which the Gita and the Bhagavatam automatically go well beyond. So he was stressing to the Qazi, he said that this scripture, the Quran, it is affected by the modes of material nature, whereas the Gita and the Bhagavatam are not affected by the modes of nature. They are Amala Purana. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yat Vaishnavanam Priyam. It is a pure script, spotless. It is divine in origin. It is unaffected by the modes of material nature. The Prabhupada points out in the second chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. What is the second chapter of the first canto called?
Divinity
and divine service. Right. Srila Prabhupada said this chapter of the Bhagavatam is so important. He said devotees should memorize the entire chapter. There's so many principal shlokas. Now, in terms of our philosophy, the Gaudiya philosophy, Mahaprabhu is only attributed to writing 8 verses, Shikshastika. But he instructed his followers to elaborate upon his teachings. He taught them. He spent 30 days with Sanatan, 10 days with Rupa, right, and more on top of that. Right, and he instructed them, you write down all my teachings. Everything I've taught you, you write it down. So then our Padati in our Gaudiya, in our lineage, because even within our lineage there are different Padatis. Right? There is a Padati or there is a... And Padati means like a process of how to become perfect, like a pathway to become perfect. So even in the Gaudiya lineage, there is a Padati coming through Vakrashwara Pandit, and there's a Padati going through Rupa and Raghunath Das Goswami. Right? So there's 2 different Padatis. Right? There's 2 different ways to become perfect. Right? Vakrashwara was given Siddha Pranali. Mahaprabhu said to him, "You are such and such." Right, in terms of your relationship with Krishna, you meditate upon that, right? And then his disciple Gopal Guru Goswami, and then his disciple Jan Chandra, they wrote Padatis about this process. That's bona fide, it's not unbonafide. Siddha Pranali is not unbonafide, but it is not the Padati which we're following. We're following through Rupa and Raghunath. Now our Padati or our pathway to become perfect is based on the system given by Rupa Goswami of going from Shraddha to Prema. That is how we become perfect in our Krishna consciousness. Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Vajana Kriya, Anatta Nivritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. We have to gradually rise through these different levels. That is our Padati. That is our process of reaching perfection. Now, when Rupa Goswami wrote about this, right, in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when he wrote about this Padati, how to become perfect, and he wrote this verse, Shraddha to Prema, it is based upon the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto. Because from verses, I think from 12, I have to look it up, but I think from 12 to 20, that is where this is described. Rising from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha to Vajana Kriya to Anatta Nivritti to Nishta, right, and then Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema are all described. Right? So this is our process of how to become perfect. So Prabhupada points out in the second chapter, in that section, Srila Prabhupada points out that if you really want to understand the Bhagavatam, Sanatana Dharma, Bhagavat Dharma, true religion, he said you must live in the mode of goodness. Those in the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, they cannot understand these things. That's why some people cannot understand the Bhagavatam or the Gita. They cannot understand the teachings, the transcendental nature of the teachings. Now, why cannot they not understand? Because they're too much in tamagun or too much in rajagun. That's why Prabhupada insisted, that's why Mahaprabhu insisted, that's why the Vedas teach, you cannot eat flesh. It is tamasic. And you cannot understand real religion, Sanatana Dharma or Bhagavad Dharma or the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you're a flesh eater. It is not possible. Because it keeps your consciousness bound in tamaguna, in ignorance. And as long as you're in tamaguna or in ignorance, you can't understand the Bhagavatam or the Gita. Because the Gita is teaching compassion. The Gita is teaching to be beyond the bodily conception of life. The difference between matter and spirit. How will you understand the difference between matter and spirit if you can't give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and eating your flesh? How can you understand it? It's not possible. Therefore, Prabhupada said, first you must come to the mode of goodness. Right? And in the introduction to the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada says, this book, which is a Bhakti Shastra, which brings you from the very beginning of spiritual life, Vacho Vega Manasa, from the very beginning of spiritual life to the highest level of spiritual life in 11 verses. Right? Prabhupada says in the very beginning, in the introduction, he said the purpose of this scripture is to get you from passion and ignorance to goodness. Because once you're in goodness, then you can go further. Otherwise, how can you go further? If you, and for those in the lineage of Rupa and Raghunath, Rupa and Sanatan, which is our Padati, it is described, I think by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that it is described, the first three verses of the Nectar of Instruction, the Upadeshamrita, are the basis of our bhajan for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas in this lineage, which is bhajana kriya. Our process is based on these three. Right? Vacho vega, manasa grota vega, achahara, priyashascha, and utsaha, nishchayat. Right? This is our part, this is our, the way that we do our bhaja, based on these three verses. This is how we realize God. Right? So this is the process which is given. So when Mahaprabhu met with the Chankazi, he said that what you are saying, it is not proper. What you are saying is not good. It is affected by the modes of nature. And the Chankazi agreed with Mahaprabhu. He said, actually it is true. Our scripture is affected by the modes of nature. And the Chankazi became a Vaishnava. He became a devotee. Actually, he was an incarnation of Kamsa. In the previous pastime, how did Krishna deal with him? Kamsa. Right? He jumped up onto the throne. He came into this state. He jumped up onto the throne, grabbed him, threw him, picked him up, and he threw him back into the arena. And then Krishna jumped all the way from the throne into the arena and landed on his chest. Right? Just laying on his chest, went smashed him. Heavily smashed him. That was after him and Balaram had just beaten Mushtik and Chanur. Right? Smashed them. These were powerful personalities. Each one of these guys was as strong as 10,000 elephants. And Krishna and Balaram just smashed them. And then they got Kamsa and they smashed Kamsa. Krishna just smashed him. And Kamsa was just dead. And then Krishna's cowherd boys, because they come with him to Mathura, then they said, Jai, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho. And then one of the cowherd boys ran across the arena, jumped on Krishna, grabbed him and threw him on the ground, and got on top of him and started like wrestling. Right? Krishna was defeated by one of his friends. One of his friends got and said, yeah, you think you're big, you just beat Kamsa, boy. He said, you're not as big as me. Right? So then how did he treat him in the next incarnation? He came as a Kazi. He didn't kill him next time. Shishupala and Dantavakra, right? They were both killed by Krishna. But then they came as Jagai and Madai. They were converted. Different mood. So Mahaprabhu, he doesn't kill the demons. He kills the demoniac quality. Right? Because we are, in Kali Yuga, the demon and the devotee are in the same body. So Mahaprabhu doesn't kill us. But he kills that demoniac propensity over time. Yeyata mam prabhajante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. As you surrender to me, I will reward you. The more you surrender to me, the more I'll destroy that demoniac quality. So we'll stop here and I'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Religious traditions that spirit God dominated by the modes of nature. And then we also hear how the Vedas are revelations of great realizations and so on like that. But then in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the Vedas are also mainly dealing with the three modes of realization. Not including the Bhagavad, of course. So it seems to indicate that the Vedas themselves are contaminated in a certain context anyway. Because they also allow for eating meat and other such things. So could you explain that?
It just means that 96% of the Vedas is Karma Kanda and 4% is Jnana Kanda, and then there is a very small percentage, if you look at the total Vedic literature, which is the Bhakti Shastra, which is the Bhagavatam, the Gita, and there's certain other books which are considered to fall into that category, Gopal, Tapani Upanishad, and there's certain which are considered to be transcendental. So yeah, the rest of them are contaminated by the modes of nature.
When we say they're contaminated, how do we put it?
Well, whether we say, use that word contaminated, but yes, they are influenced by the modes like that. And they are for those in the modes, or affected by the modes. Prabhupada was once asked, so is it better to follow the Bible, be a Christian, or to follow the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas? So then Prabhupada said the Karmakanda portion is better because it is Vedic and it regulates one in such a way that will gradually elevate the person like that. So that is the point of the Vedas, because especially in previous ages people are very ritualistic and materialistic, and at least by following the Vedic literature there's an opportunity for them to elevate instead of degrade the consciousness. And at least by accepting Vedic authority, that in and of itself is purifying to the soul. So, okay, it's not, but it leads, it assists one to come to a point where in the future, if one is fortunate, one will come in contact with a Majjhima Adhikari, a devotee, and by coming in contact with a devotee, one may have some Adhikara qualification that one can then take up devotional service. You want to?
So what would be the difference?
Superior. Because according to what Mahaprabhu said in that conversation with the Kazi, the people who wrote it are more elevated in consciousness. So therefore, because they're more elevated in consciousness, one would understand there's a more overall long-term elevating effect. You want to add anything? Any other question or comment? Just speak up. I can't hear properly. Just have to speak up.
You just mentioned the personalities in our hearts, demonic and divine. So throughout the life in Krishna consciousness, when do we get this stamina and strength to defeat the demonic, and actually not to fall down prey to our personal
Lord Chaitanya taught Rupa Goswami, he taught him about the science of devotional service. So Prabhupada calls nectar of devotion the science of devotional service. So Mahaprabhu says there is 64 items of bhakti, or devotional service. And then at the end, after saying 59, then the final five, they're said to be the most potent, they're repeated, right? So, Sadhu Sangha, Nam Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Srimurti, Shodaya Sevan, and Mathura Vas, right? So these are considered to be the most powerful. So our whole process, the whole Krishna consciousness movement, everything that Lord Chaitanya taught and everything that Srila Prabhupada gave us through the Pacific succession is just based on practicing these five powerful items. And if you practice these five, you'll always feel enthused. You know, you come before Radha Balava, I mean, my God. You know? Go before Radha Balava and not be enthused. You know, I'll go Nittai or Jagannath Balaram Subhadra or Nisringadeva or Giri Govardhan or, you know, and try not to be, you cannot not be enthused. You just look at them and you say, well, I walk out of the temple, I'm not enthused again. So I come back in the temple. Spend more time in the temple. It actually surprises me how little time devotees spend in this temple. In this physical temple room. Right? When I come to Melbourne, because I don't have the fortune of living here, when I come, I chant my japa in front of the deities. I just spend time with them, you know, because they affect me. Right? So I spend more time with them. Spend more time with the Bhagavatam. Right? Go to the Bhagavatam classes. Go to read Prabhupada's books as he instructed. Associate with advanced devotees. Melbourne is so fortunate. We have so many advanced devotees coming through regularly. Like this year, I don't think we've ever had so many advanced devotees coming through our temple. It's like Flinders Street Station. They just keep coming through. It's like just, you know, finish offering your obeisances, you stand up, there's someone else there, and it's like it doesn't stop. What to speak of the devotees in this community? There's advanced devotees in this room right now. Right? So you take advantage of their association. Right? And kirtan. Be in the kirtan. Right? Chant Hare Krishna with the devotees. When I was in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, we had the reunion. 40th anniversary of Radha Gopinath. Most powerful kirtan I've ever been in my life. 200 devotees chanting in circular key next to the Sydney Opera House. 200 devotees doing Harinam Sankirtan, all the original members of our movement here in Australia who started this movement on behalf of Prabhupada. The most powerful. I've never been in kirtan like this before. Powerful kirtan. So we have to get into the kirtan chant, right? And then what is the other one? Mathura Vas. Means you have to reside in Mathura, Vrindavan, Mayapur, Jagannath Puri. So you either go to Mayapur, Puri and Vrindavan regularly. Prabhupada said we should go once a year. Prabhupada said we should go once a year. One time Rameswara Prabhu, because 300 devotees were coming from America to the Mayapur festival. Right? And that was when book distribution was very powerful. Right? Rameswara Prabhu was in charge of the BBT. He said to Prabhupada, if we send 300 devotees, that's $300,000. $1,000 for each air ticket. $300,000 for them to come to Mayapur. He said, he said to Prabhupada, my humble suggestion, Prabhupada, we keep the money, use that for the BBT, and everyone stays and distributes more books. Prabhupada said, no, everyone should come to Mayapur once a year, get purified, and then go back and preach. So if you can't go to Mayapur, there's Mayapur right there. If you can't go to Vrindavan, there's Vrindavan right there. And if you can't go to Puri, there's Puri right there. This is a holy dharma, this place. Like that. So if you associate with these five, you'll always be enthused. Even then, you associate with these five and you're still not enthused. Right? So associate more with them. Right? You have to be determined. To go back to Godhead is not easy. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says we have to become like soldiers on the battlefield. He said when the soldier's fighting the war, he said sometimes he gets shot with an arrow. Right? So what does he do? Right? The soldier says, oh, I can't fight today. Or, you know, I can't keep doing my fighting today. You know, I've been shot with an arrow, I have to go and take care of it. So he plucks the arrow and he goes back home. Right? And he stays in the ashram and he cries. And then he has to cook special prasadam for himself. And then he reads Prabhupada's books more because he can't do his seva. No. Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur says he's on the battlefield, right? And he gets shot with an arrow, rips it out and says, okay, more. It keeps going. Right? Keeps fighting. You have to have that attitude as a devotee. You have to have that attitude. Because it's not easy to be a devotee for a long time. Because Maya is very powerful. Right? And she always sends tricks to try to take us away from Krishna. Like that. So you have to have that attitude, right? And where do you get the attitude from? Right? Our founder Acharya, our grandfather, and our father, or our mother, like that, our gurus. Right? That's where you get the attitude from. Sometimes, you know, I feel I'm struggling in Krishna consciousness. So then you know, you have to become introspective and you have to look deep within yourself and you have to reconnect to these five things. You have to reconnect to your guru. Sometimes we're not connected to our guru properly. We see him every day, we see the picture and we offer some incense to the picture and, you know, we hear a lecture, but not connected like that. So sometimes we have to go deep and we have to reconnect. Like that. Also, Haridas Thakur says, if you're losing enthusiasm, then observe holy days. Just like very soon, the holy days are coming. Right? Jolan Yatra, Baladev Purni, Janmashtami, Vyasa Puja, Radhashtami. Right? Now, if that's not enough to get you re-enthused, then you know, you might as well go and join the Mormons or something. Or become a Muslim. Is that okay? Okay.
When you're describing about that war, Sonia, and you were Bhish Pitamana. Bhish Pitamana had his spirit. He was pulling out the arrows, whatever Arjun was fighting.
Which one?
Bhish Pitamana. Pitamana. Bhishma Pitamana. Bhishma.
Bhishma. Bhishma.
Pitamana.
Bhishma. Yeah, yeah. He was the most powerful of the warriors. Nothing could stop him.
Only when Shikhandi came in the way, he stopped fighting.
Shikhandi came. Yeah, Arjuna shot him from behind. Behind Shikhandi, like that. Yeah, oh, they're all like that. They all had that attitude. They die on the battlefield. Like that. You have to have that attitude as a devotee. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, everyone else can leave, but you stay. Right. So that's the attitude that we have to have. I'll stay and I'll worship Radha Vallabha. Okay, if all of you want to go, okay. But I'll stay and I'll worship Radha Vallabha. I'll cook the offering. I don't know how to cook, but I'll go. I'll cook the offering, right? And I'll come, I'll do the offering, then I'll do the aarti, and then I'll dress them. I'm not a very good dresser either, but you know, if that's what it means, everyone go and I'll stay and I'll do it. Right? And then I'll die after about 7 days. Yeah, there's so much service. But that's the attitude. The devotee has to have this attitude. I'm not going to leave. Any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada.